If you want to get your Bibles, turn to Genesis chapter 1, and I want us to look at the third day of creation. Mike, Scott, how are you? Look in Genesis chapter 1, third day of creation. What did God create on day 3? Somebody's got to know. Chuck, what'd you say? Sea, land, and vegetation. Chuck, when did you learn that? You don't know? A couple days ago? Yeah? You known that for a few years? Genesis chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. God says, "Let the waters under the heavens..." Are there waters above the heavens? "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. So we've got our dry land, we've got our seas, we've got this vegetation that would come forth from the land, but this morning we want to talk about specifically the seas that were created on that day. And to look at how the Bible and the science of oceanography are in incredible harmony and agreement. And I feel a bit inept in teaching this with Dan McLeod sitting in the back and knowing how much he knows about oceanography, so he's going to correct all of the mistakes that I make this morning. In Psalm 107, the psalmist there talks about, it's a psalm of thanksgiving about all that we have and all that God has blessed us with. And in Psalm 107, starting in verse 23, he talks about those who go down to the sea in their ships, who do business on the great waters. Do you know anybody in the Bible who went down to the sea in their ships and they did business on the waters? That was their livelihood? You know any apostles that did that? That was their livelihood. And so the psalmist, David, talks about this. Here are these men who go down to their ships. They live on these ships. Their whole life is centered on these ships. Look at what he says in verse 24. Here they are going about their daily lives and their daily work. And what do? They see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. Are there wonders to behold in the creation of God in the waters, in the seas, in the oceans? Anybody ever been scuba diving? Snorkeling? Let's see, how else would you see them? Glass bottom ship? You ever been on one of those? That's what I was trying to get to. Those less adventuresome folks, that's where I was going with the glass bottom boat. You don't put your body in the water. The Discovery Channel, HD TV, right? Discovery Channel. Are there wonders to behold in the deep? Have we found them all? Have we seen it all? There are folks who say we know more about the moon and the surface of the moon than we do the ocean and the bottom and the ocean floor. There's a lot that we have not discovered. There's a lot that we haven't seen. And so when we talk about the Bible and science, and we talked this morning about the Bible and oceanography, all oceanography is, it's one of the easier terms for us to understand in this study because it's just a study of the ocean. It's just a study of the things that are in the ocean, the motions and the geography, the chemical composition. We'll say a little bit about that, about the ocean. And what I want us to see this morning is the astounding agreement between what you find written in the Bible and what you find that is being discovered in the area of oceanography today. Did the Bible writers know about the oceans? Did the Bible writers know about the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Indian Ocean, the Arctic Ocean? How many is that? Which one have I left out? The southern, is that what you said? Did they know about all those oceans? These holy men of God spoke as they were moved by the Holy Spirit. What did they know about this? I want us to look at some verses this morning. What did these writers know about what they were writing? Did they comprehend the things that they were writing in the Old Testament and the New Testament? And what we will see as we go through this, I hope, is what we have seen throughout this study, is that there is, as we look at the ocean, there is incredible design. And when you find design, what does that demand? A designer. These things didn't happen by accident. These things do not have the detail. They do not have the beauty. They do not have all that we are discovering simply by accident. And so we look at these days of creation, and we see that we looked at day three just a second ago, but if you've still got Genesis 2 open, or Genesis 1 open, the Bible says that on day two, that the waters of the earth were separated. So we read in Genesis 1 and verse 9 that there were waters under the heavens. Were there waters above the heavens? The Bible uses the word heavens to talk about where God dwells, talks about it being where the heavenly luminaries that we talked about last week, the sun, the moon, and stars exist. And then there's the heavens where the bird fry. Look in Genesis chapter 1, verse 6. Day 2. Then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Where is this expanse? God said, let there be an expanse. By the way, is this the first time waters are mentioned in the creation story? No. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. On the face of the what? On the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. We've got waters mentioned right at the very beginning. God says on day one, let there be light, and there was light. Day two, let there be an expanse, let there be a firmament in the midst of, what does the midst of mean? Stick it right in the middle of what? The waters. God put put this expanse in the middle of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters. You got that? God has waters. The Spirit moved across the face of the waters. Let there be light. And then God said, I'm going to separate the waters from what? The waters. Do we have dry land yet? Nope, we got that on day three. This is day two. Divide the waters from the water. Thus God, verse 7, made the firmament, and he divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And so there's a separation that occurs. And as this separation occurs, there was water that was housed in the atmosphere above the firmament, above the expanse. And this is likely what created an apparent greenhouse effect that existed and enclosed the earth in those early days of the existence of the earth. So you've got the waters that are above the expanse of the firmament. Then you've got the waters that are on the earth. Are there waters under the earth? Under the surface? Look in Genesis chapter 7 for a minute. What happens in Genesis chapter 7? Genesis 6, we read about Noah and the ark. So what do we read about in Genesis 7? Noah built the ark. Now we read in chapter 7 about the flood. In Genesis chapter 7, in verse 11, the end of verse 11 says that the windows of heaven were opened. What does that tell you about what's happening?
Not separating the waters anymore.
Here comes the rain. Those waters that were housed above the expanse of the firmament, here they come. They're coming down upon the earth. But what does verse 11 also tell us? Before it talks about the windows of heaven, it says, that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. So here's water above, here's water beneath. When the flood came, we think about it raining 40 days and 40 nights. Is that the only place that water came from to flood the earth? It came from above, it came from beneath, it came from everywhere and flooded the earth. Now, who's writing Genesis chapter 1? about the creation? Moses. Who's writing Genesis chapter 7 about the flood? Same guy. Didn't change authors midstream there. So you've got the waters above, you've got the waters below, and then he says in that creation story that those waters below that were on the earth, that he gathered them together in one place and he called them the seas. Now I want to ask you a question. If Moses is writing all of this, how does Moses know this stuff? How does Moses, here's where Moses lived. He grew up in Egypt. Now, we don't know all of the travels of Moses. We know that he spent some time in Midian and spent 40 years, and then he came back, and then he crossed the Red Sea. So what did he see of a sea? He saw the Red Sea that he crossed. He saw perhaps likely the Mediterranean Sea. What did he know about the seas? What did he know about the waters above the expanse and below? And what did he know about the waters under the deep? How could he know that? He couldn't of himself, could he? That's the whole point. There's no way that Moses writing the books of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, some, what's this year, 2000, some 3,500 years ago, no way he knew any of that of himself. So how did it get in the Bible? There is no other explanation. Not just for what Moses, but for everything else that we're going to see. There's no other explanation. There is incredible design when we come and look. And that's look at some of these design elements. The earth's surface is covered 72% by water. That's a lot. If you were going to make a planet for people to live on, that's what Earth is for, right? It's a planet for people to live on. Wouldn't you give the people a little bit more than 28% to live? If 72% is water, you got 28% land. Of the 28% land, are we inhabiting all 28? Are we inhabiting the whole thing? Are there any parts of this land that we're not living in that have not been developed? I mean, it used to be Royal Palm and Wellington and all of those, right? We didn't live in those places. Those were like way out there, and you know, you had to pack a lunch if you were going out that far. Now there's actually people who live out there. Isn't that crazy? Are there places of this earth that we don't live in? So we've got 28% and we don't live in all of that. But if we were making an earth, Would we make the land to water ratio different? Here's a place for people to live. Oh, sure, give them 28% of it. Why do you think God made an earth with 72% water? Here's a planet covered 72%. Well, it would make it easier for him to flood it, right? You know, let's just make... He made that in chapter 1, and he knew chapter 6 and 7 were coming, so all right, we'll just make a lot of water so it's easy when I get there, right? Is that why he made it all that? We need water to survive, don't we? What does this earth with 72% water, what does that 72% water do for us? It helps and is the primary source by which we have rain. Do we need rain? Does the earth need rain? Here's the 28% of the globe. Does the 28% need the other 72%? Can't live without it. And so here's the 28% that needs the 72% to create the rain. Now some people, remember those numbers we were using last week about the measurements about the size of the earth and the size of the universe, and we figured how do they measure these things? Here's another one for you. Mathematically, here's what some people have calculated. That the ocean 72%, the waters of the earth are 72% of a creation. If it was half of its present capacity, don't give it 72%, just give it 36% of the globe, then it would only provide 1/4 of its current average rainfall. Would that work? Let's say you reduce the ocean and now it's only 36% of the globe. Now what does it do? It only provides 1/4 of the rainfall that is currently. Would that be enough? So now you've got 36% water, you've got 64% land, and you only have a quarter percent, you only have a quarter of the water. Now for that, that doesn't work. So 72% is working pretty good, isn't it? What if it was more than 72%? What if you let it have 50% again what it already has? Well, those mathematicians have figured that the annual rainfall would actually be four times what it currently is. Would that be helpful, beneficial to us? Would you like to live on the coast of California with four times more annual rainfall? 72% is just right. And that's just for rainfall. That's just that, you know, we look at times where we have droughts. We look at times where we have an abundance of rain. And it all balances out, doesn't it? Somehow God finds a way to make it just right. But if that ocean was smaller or if that ocean was larger, it wouldn't work. How much of the ocean is salt? A lot. You ever had a gulp of ocean water? Did it have much salt in it? In every gallon of ocean water, there is a quarter pound of salt. It's estimated that if you were to take all of the salt out of the ocean and spread it across the land, that it would be 400 feet deep in salt. That's a lot of salt. So what? Why do you need salt in the ocean? Why can't it just be like Lake Okeechobee? Why can't it just be like the canal next to Greg Morris's house? Why does it need salt? It cleanses it. Why does it need salt? You aware that clouds cannot sufficiently form without salt? Are there clouds forming off this canal next to the building? Greg and Michelle, you got clouds forming over the canal next to your house? Clouds do not form with water alone. They've got to have some kind of nuclei that allows the moisture to gather around. So you've got these huge quantities of salt that are in the ocean. You've got the wind that comes. You've got the water that's there. And because of all of those elements together, it helps to create clouds. What do we call that? What is it called when the ocean and the moisture and the salt that's in the ocean is creating clouds? Aha, somebody's been to science class recently. Here we have the how did you say it?
Hydraulic cycle.
What happens in this cycle? Aren't you glad you came today? You get to be reminded of those days that you didn't like when you were there, right? What happens in this cycle? You've got evaporation happening. Somebody who's got a better scale than I do has figured out that water weighs 800 times more than air. You ever tried to lift something that was 800 pounds heavier than you were? Was that a fun task? Here's water that evaporates. You know what's unique about water? Water can exist in what forms on this earth? Gas? Solid? Liquid? Is there anything else on the face of this earth, not in space, not somewhere on earth, is there anything else on earth that can exist in all three stages? There's nothing else. Just water. Isn't that amazing? So we've got this water, and this water can be in the ocean, and then it can go from being in the ocean and evaporate and go into the air. Then what happens? Well, you've got this moisture that is evaporated into the air. It travels across this land, and once it's transported across the land, it begins to rain, begins to create this condensation. And some have estimated that to be at 16 million tons a second across the globe. And all of that, you want a picture of it? Here you go. All of that is happening every day Have you ever seen it happen? I mean, have you ever watched the whole cycle? Have you ever just sat there and watched the water evaporate? Oh, there it goes. Have you ever watched the clouds come and transport themselves across the land and then see the water start to come down? And it goes into the ground and it goes deeper and deeper and then it runs itself back into the ocean. Have you ever watched that happen? Oh, you've seen part of it. Yeah. The part we see is usually the part where we've got our windshield wipers going. That's the part that we usually see. Oh, you've seen the water spouts too. So was it evaporating? Oh, okay. All right. All of this is happening. When did we figure... I want to go back to that. When did we figure this out? I mean, was Job just sitting around one... You know, because Job didn't have anything better to do, right, than to sit around. Was Job just sitting around one day and say, hey, how did that happen? Did he see it happen? And write down in his memoirs that, oh, I've discovered this cycle. Man didn't figure this out until the 16th, 17th century. He didn't fully comprehend it, and yet, do you know we read about it in the Bible? The Mississippi River dumps 6 million gallons per second into the Gulf of Mexico. That's a lot of water. Where does it go? I mean, if you've got 6 million gallons a second coming into the Gulf of Mexico, where does it go when it gets in the Gulf of Mexico? It's got to go somewhere, right? Comes out, you know, hopefully it's not going to go across the state of Florida. It's going to come out and here into the Atlantic Ocean. And it's, where is it going? Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Wise man Solomon, what did he say? All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. How does that work? It's not just the Mississippi. All of the rivers run into the sea, and yet how is the sea not filling up? How is it not overflowing? To the place from which the rivers come, there they go again. All of these rivers dump themselves into the sea, and then what does the sea do? Where do the rivers come from, by the way? Where do these rivers just appear magically out of thin air? Rivers run into the sea. These seas themselves dump themselves back into rivers, and it's this cycle, and yet what we see is what's above ground. Let me go back to this. What we see is what's here above the ground. We don't see this groundwater down here most of the time unless we go digging. If you go digging in South Florida, you're going to find that pretty quick. But what we see is what's up here. And yet Solomon said, it's happening. And he's writing and saying, all of this is flowing into the sea. And then he says near the end of the book, if the clouds are full of rain, what do? Obvious. They empty themselves. So here in this one book, Solomon says, all of this water is going into the sea, but that sea is not full, and that sea is giving it back. And then there's these clouds, and when the clouds are full, they're dumping the rain. And here's what Amos says about it. Amos, and we've got Amos several hundred years even before Christ. God calls for the waters of the sea, and he pours them out on the face of the earth. What is he talking about? God calls for the waters. Come here, waters. And then once he gets the waters, he pours them out on the land. What's he talking about? He's talking about this whole cycle that man figured out about 400 or 500 years ago. How did Amos know about it? How did Amos know that God takes the water from the sea and then he dumps it on the land when he was 2,000 years early from the rest of man knowing that? There's incredible design. And when you come and look at the Bible, there's incredible detail about things that it's not possible that we could have known without the Word of God. And then one more thing about design, and then I want us to talk about some of the treasures that we have from the ocean. How deep is the ocean? Is there anything to the depth of the ocean and the preservation of life on land. What if the ocean wasn't very deep? If all of the planet's features were smoothed out, take all of the mountains, all the hills, smooth it all out, and not let there be any mountains, valleys, or anything anywhere on earth, whether it be on land or under the sea. Smooth it all out, and water still covers the entire globe by at least 2 miles. So is there more water or is there more land? Which has a greater level here? Well, then how do we survive? If there's more water than there is land, then how can we get the land high enough so that we don't drown? I killed that on purpose, Bill. I don't want people reading. How do we get high enough from the water? I mean, I know that's, you know, we live at sea level, so we're not as concerned and thoughtful about those things. God says there the waters of the ocean are laid up in the deep. How deep do these storehouses get? The psalmist also talks about the deep places that exist on the earth. How deep do they get? Dan, how deep have you been? You've been 5,000 feet? That's a long way. Was that in your scuba gear? Dan's been down 5,000 feet. Have you ever sent anything further than 5,000 feet? How far down have we discovered? 35,000 feet. How far is that? 7 miles. There are parts of this. See, we look at Earth and we see what goes up. There are parts of this Earth that go down 7 miles. 35,000 feet. How tall is Mount Everest? 29,000 feet. And some more. Somebody knows their geography. So is Mount Everest, tallest point on earth, 29,000 feet and some more. Where is this? Mariana Strait, what's the deepest point, Dan? Is that deepest point still? Mariana's Trench, 35,000. So we've got a depth that is greater than the height to the land. So if you take Mount Everest, if you could, this would be fun to do, right? Jesus said, if you have faith, say to this mountain, so hello people, I want to see this happen. Say to Mount Everest, go down into the Mariana's Trench, I want to see this happen. You put Mount Everest down in the deepest part of the ocean and it's still covered up by a mile of water. So we have all of this water that exists on this earth, and yet the depth that exists that we don't even know. Again, we know more perhaps about the surface of the moon than we do somewhat the surface underneath the water. This evolutionist had to admit Earth's ocean is the greatest balance wheel upon which we depend. For its depth, for the amount of water that provides the rain, for all of these details that we've talked about, it's the greatest balance wheel upon which we rely, and yet we don't think that. We have our 28% of land, and we say this is what it's all about, and we go out to the edge of that land. Some of you have been sunburned enough to know that we go out to the edge of that land and we see the beauty of the ocean. And yet I don't know that we fully understand how much we rely and depend on it. Here, just somebody say something. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, I was just going to say one other thing too. God designed the oceans as our thermal control device for the earth.
Yes. That's on this list, Jerry. Let's see. Am I to it yet? There it is. What were you going to say, Scott?
I was pointing to Jerry.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Just pointing to Jerry. What do we have in the sea? 13% of our salt. Do we need salt? When you go to lunch today, do you need salt? Our bodies need water. Our bodies need salt. 13% of our salt comes from the ocean. We've got numerous minerals that we get from the ocean. We've got the worldwide travel. You got to be kidding me, it's that far. We've got worldwide travel that the ocean accommodates. Do you think Moses knew that? Do we read about anybody in the Bible having a navy? Good, yes. Who in the Bible had a navy? Solomon had his own navy. How far do you think that navy went? You think they sailed around the globe? Here we've got this worldwide travel that our oceans accommodate and allows commerce to exist. We've got all of the food that the oceans provide. Of course, we've talked about the rains. And here's what Jerry mentioned. Is this 72% of the water, 72% of our globe covered by water, is what is regulating our temperatures. It's what's balancing the temperatures on this globe. I don't want to make this political. I find it laughingly ridiculous that man is so proud of man, that man is so impressed with himself and his ingenuity and who he is. Remember, we live on 28% of the land, right? 28% of the globe, we live on, well, all we have is 28%. And this man says that the industrialized sections of this land, how much of the 28% is industrialized? But what have we done? We have created global warming. Little old us pipsqueaks in this big massive earth that's covered by 72% water, and that's what's regulating the temperatures of this earth, and we have somehow made an impact? Folks, man is so puffed up about his accomplishments and his failures, apparently. What can man do that can overshadow what 72% of this earth is doing?
It sounds like questions that God
was asking. It sounds exactly like questions that God was asking Job in those closing chapters of that book. Here's our globe. Go back to those figures. What if the ocean was only half its present size? You think it'd be a little bit colder on this earth? You know, we live down here in paradise where the temperatures, except for this last winter when things went crazy, are pretty comfortable. Dan? The first 15 feet of depth of our oceans hold more heat than land and atmosphere combined. That's how our temperatures are regulated. Is by this, what? How did it get just right? Are there cold places on this earth? Yeah, I mean, you're crazy to live there, but they exist, right? There's cold places, there are warm places, but everything balances out. How? Because God covered the earth with 72% water. Here's something else I want you to get. It is estimated that 90% of our oxygen comes from sea life, from one cell plants and the seaweed that's in the ocean. I'm glad we have rainforests and I'm glad we have trees on this earth. And of course, they're giving us oxygen. Suppose we mowed down every tree on the face of the earth. They've done that nearly in Haiti, right? What if we mowed down every tree on the face of the earth? Is all of our oxygen going to disappear? God gave us 72% of our globe covered by water. Where is our oxygen supply coming from? 90% of it is coming from that ocean, coming from that life that is within the ocean. God knew that that man might come along and do what man wants to do. And then some of these other things, Freddie mentioned this about the tides and how they clean and sweep the harbors. What about what some people call these automatic control systems? We've got a baptistry back here. David Brown, how often do you check the chemicals? Why do you check the chemicals? Y'all have a pool? You have a pool at home? What if you never check the chemical levels in your pool? What if you just let it go? Nature will take its course. You're going to have a pond, right? Have you ever went out and checked the chemical levels in the ocean and then, you know, dumped in some acid or, you know, tried to adjust the pH a little bit or put some chlorine in there? Why aren't we messing around with the chemical levels that are in the ocean? We don't need to. Why don't we need to? I mean, this earth has been here. Suppose you left your pool for 6,000 years. What's going to happen to it? Life. Yeah. Smells and frogs and, yeah. The ocean has some of these automatic control systems. It doesn't need us to come along and fix it. It's taken care of all by itself. I want us to get into these, and we're going to run out of time. The scientific foreknowledge that exists in the Bible, and we've pointed out some already. We pointed out those that talked about the waters running to the sea and God calling up the water. How did they know that? How did they know those things existed even before man understood it? The topography of the ocean floor, it was once believed, and here's a quote that shows it, but it was once believed that just like you walk out on the sandy shores of your beach, that it would be that way all the way to the sandy shores of the next continent. That it was just a series of plains and plateaus that went across, but now we know better. Now we know that it's not just some level ground that goes across the ocean floor, but the Bible said that. Here was man thinking, oh, well, this is the case. But the Bible talked about those deep places and channels. And Jonah talked about the mountains. Remember, he's off the ship. He's in the water. He's got weeds wrapped around his head. The deep was closing in on him. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. Are there mountains underwater? Yes. Man, oh, no, it's level all the way across. And Jonah said, oh, no, I've been down there. It's not level all the way across. Jonah knew that. And those questions that God asked Job, have you walked in the recesses, the trenches of the... Job, have you been down there? How did Job, when he's writing that, how did Job know to write that? How did Job know about the recesses of the deep? Only because God told them they were there. We have in the Bible documentation that predates man's discoveries of these things by thousands of years. The question is, how did they get in the Bible? Lucky guesses? Oh, David, you didn't do that. Yeah, you gave me an extra minute too, didn't you? Freshwater springs? In the salt water, there's freshwater springs? What about the paths of the sea? Matthew Fontaine Maury read Psalm 8 and said there's got to be paths out there. He's called the pathfinder of the sea. But God talked about them even before Matthew Fontaine Maury found them. There's incredible harmony between what we read in the Bible and what man is finding in the ocean. Question is, what does that tell you about the Bible? There's only one possible explanation for the Bible. And that's, it's from God. And that's the only conclusion that an honest observer can come to. Thanks for your attention and your participation this morning.